where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And today we have something a little different, but I think this is absolutely fascinating. When we think about some of the greatest mysteries out there, some of the keys are hidden in ancient writings, in ancient languages, in ancient texts. But trying to unlock those mysteries are very difficult things to do. And we have someone on the line who has dedicated her life to just those types of things. I'm talking about Anita Meyer. Now, it's interesting. Anita is the author of the book Beyond the Bible Code, but it didn't start out in that direction. She attended college for criminology. But what's interesting is that it's turned out that she's trying to solve some of the greatest mysteries that are posed to mankind. Now, through her many studies, she's also a linguistic decipherment expert in ancient writings in the fields of orthography, bibliography, and graphology, and is also a cryptology whiz. And among her other skillful abilities, she is also a visual pattern recognizer in the study of nature and structure. Off the beaten path, she is a religious procurement specialist who thoroughly engages in finding strong evidences for God's existence. So we're so interested in speaking with her. Thank you for joining us today, Anita Meyer.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, how did you go from becoming someone who went to college for criminology and ended up in all of this linguistic stuff? How did that transfer take place?
Yeah, my upbringing was very interesting. I was raised in a Jewish family, and I went through public school, and I also went through Hebrew school, and then I lived in Israel for about 2 years, and I also traveled around the globe to Mexico and all the islands and many places. And I always had an interest to seek out strong evidence for a creator. And so that's mainly what got me into the subjects that I write about. But my biggest challenge was that I was always hit with from people from all directions. No matter how I tried to present evidence for a creator, I would always get the reply back that no matter what you do, you can't prove the existence of a creator. And so that's what prompted me to go on the hunt for evidence that proves that there is a creator.
Now, in terms of ancient texts, how difficult is that to cipher those out, to figure those out? I mean, obviously, you know how to read some languages. How many languages do you know how to read?
I can read Hebrew very well. And what I do is I compare writings that are found all across the globe. And I see and I match up the similarities in between the letters and the words. And so I can see that there's a pattern, a similarity pattern, in all the writings found across the globe, and even in languages. but to gear you into what I had discovered is that I'm also a visual pattern recognizer, mm-hmm. Okay? And so I find patterns that are in nature, and I relate them to other things. And one of the big discoveries that I made, and which is in my second book, In Search for the Holy Language, but it's also carried over into Beyond the Bible Code, is that I found a link between the mathematical units that are found in nature to actual scripture. Hebrew scripture. And I can go into a little bit about that if, you know, you're familiar with it. We're all taught about pi in school.
Right.
3.14.
Right.
Okay. And then there's also, there's also the golden ratio.
Yes.
And there's the Fibonacci sequence. That's basically the unit of growth of when the next branch on the tree is going to grow. And the unit goes 01123 58. But when we add the last two numbers together, we get the next number. In the series, when we there's a sequence of numbers in the Fibonacci sequence, which is 144, and then follows 233. And when we divide those numbers, we get the golden ratio, which is 1.618, or inversely 618. So what I and these units of growth are in all the natural world. I mean, they are in all plant growth. They are in the human body, animals, insects, cell division, DNA, hurricanes and tornadoes, the stock market, even the life cycle of an atomic particle when they smash them together at the CERN facility.
Mm-hmm.
When they smash them together, they spiral out, and that's the same unit of growth. And we see that same unit of growth in the spiral arms of galaxies and even in the distances between the planets. So with that, I thought to link it to finding strong evidence for a creator. Okay? So what I did was I turned to the Bible, and in several, what I was looking for was one tangible piece of evidence of something that was said to have been given to us by said creator.
Mm-hmm.
And I've looked through all the ancient texts, and the only thing that I can come up with was the Ten Commandments that were given to Moses on Mount Sinai. So I thought there had to be something special about that writing, especially if it's a creator that created everything in existence, and there must be some intelligent design to that writing. So what I did was I opened up the Torah, or Genesis 1:1, which we're all familiar with, which says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But I took the Hebrew version from the Torah. And the first word in the Torah is pronounced Barashit, which means beginning. And what I did was I took the very first letter of that word, which is a Hebrew letter B, and I thought, if it can't be found there, it's nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I took a bendable wire and I bent it in the shape of that letter. Okay, but let me back up here. When I first looked at the Hebrew letter B, because I've read Hebrew for years and I never even pondered upon it, but when I took a good look at it, connections were being made in my mind, and when I looked at the Hebrew letter B, I immediately saw that there was a unit of growth to it.
Mm-hmm.
It has a little leg that sticks out, and then it gets a little bit longer, and then it comes up on the top even longer. So then I took this, to test this theory, I took a bendable wire and I bent it in the shape of this letter. I took another wire and I spiraled it around this letter with the same exact units of growth that are found in nature. In other words, it starts out small, gets a little bit bigger, and then it furrows out. And that's actually the Fibonacci sequence that feeds into the golden ratio. And that very spiral pattern matches, if you're familiar with a conch shell,
right,
how it furrows out and then it spirals, yeah, through the center. So I was left with this one spiral form. And as I started turning it around, looking at it in my hand in all different directions, I realized that when I looked at it a certain way, it produced the Hebrew letter B, but when I turned it upside down, it turned into the Hebrew letter T. And when I looked at it another way, it turned into the Hebrew letter Ayin, another way the Hebrew letter M, Mem, G, Gimel. This one form that's formed from nature's law produces the complete Hebrew alphabet consisting of 25 plus 5 final letters. So if you can grasp that, it's not only intelligent design, but it's divine design.
Hmm. Now, do you think that,
yes,
the creator put all this there is like having been a criminologist, put all of these clues in these texts as a way to show us these realities and to trace everything back? In other words, is it kind of like a breadcrumb trail left for us to discover?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what the Hebrew letters are. They are a testimony. They are the original template, the original writing template, in which you can compare to all the other writings found across the globe. As I said, there's similarities in all the letters. And for instance, if you take the Hebrew letter Aleph, and you look at, that's the Hebrew letter A, and you look at all the letters that are used in alphabets across the globe, there is a similarity in all the letter A's that match up with the Hebrew letter A. So it's quite amazing. And I found this even in the Chinese writing, even in the Mayan writing, cuneiform, the Phoenician, Chinese and Japanese writing, that's why I believe there is strong evidence for a primordial language, an original language that was said to have been used 6,000 years ago, starting with Adam in the Garden of Eden.
Now, in terms of trying to gain wider acceptance for your theories, what are the avenues that you're pursuing? Or are you just kind of saying, well, these people are never going to believe me regardless of what I do? How are you trying? Are you trying? And how are you trying, if you are, to gain broader acceptance for these discoveries you're making?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, they are undeniable. I mean, if you look at the illustrations in my book, in my books, the evidence is undeniable. I mean, you can look on my website, Anita Meyer at Wix.com, Anita Meyer Books at Wix.com, and you can see these pictures too. The evidence is undeniable. I mean, people can see, even if you don't know and you can't read the Hebrew or other writings across the globe, the illustrations show it so that the forms, that the spiral form takes is undeniable. I mean, you can see it produces from that one form, every letter in the Hebrew alphabet, and I show what the Hebrew alphabet looks like and how the spiral form produces that letter. So that's a testimony. You know, there's intelligent design in that, and that's undeniable. And, you know, it gets a little bit deeper because, you know, then I study oral Torahs and the oral Torah, the Talmud, and the Midrash, and, you know, it gets deeper in there. There's mysteries in each one of those books, clues that gear us towards this evidence, showing that this is what the language was supposed to be. For instance, like in Kabbalah, it tells us that the Creator, He used the letters, the Hebrew letters, to create everything in existence. He used them like building blocks. So, you know, I've also done some experimenting too with a sonogram, or otherwise known as a spectrogram. And it's, you know, the ultrasound, you know, that they, that they use to take pictures of the fetus,
sure,
inside the womb developing. And when I pronounced the Hebrew letter B properly, okay, and I knew it was properly because when I pronounced it properly, when I pronounced it bah, it produced the exact image of the letter itself.
Wow.
So the sound, yes, it's a science. Religion, I believe, is a way to teach us a science, a lost science.
That's fascinating that you actually said the letter and you pronounced it correctly, yeah, and it showed up on a sonogram and it looked just like the visual representation looked like the way that the letter is written. That is amazing.
Yes. And then it goes a little bit deeper because then the if you put two Hebrew letter B's back to back, you get the Hebrew letter Aleph. Okay. And then if you ever heard of the science of somatics, it's where they vibrate fine sand on a metal plate and it produces geometric form. And so Hans Jenny was the first to start experimenting with this, but actually the ancients knew this knowledge too, science of sound and frequency, and the Hebrew letters are based on that as well. And so when you pronounce the sound on this metal plate with fine sand, you get the geometric pattern of a six-pointed Star of David. Okay. Now, as I said, when you put the two Hebrew letter B's back to back, you get the Aleph. And that's why the Hebrew alphabet is known as the Alephbet. Because all the letters truly come from the first. It's trying to explain again that the letters come from the first letters. From the A and the B. Yes. And so, you know, when we read the Bible, it tells us, and God said, He said, let there be light, and there was light. it was a language, and he spoke this language, and it was based on sound and frequency that created all things. And we truly know that that vibration and frequency is the root of all existence, and it controls all, everything. I mean, light itself is a frequency.
Now,
so it's a language that has inherent power in it as well.
Now, let me ask you something totally out there. And maybe it's not totally out there. People say, you know, when you say something that you in some ways kind of pre-fate it, you know, if you have a negative attitude and you verbalize, well, I'm just going to fail at this job, then you end up failing at the job, or vice versa. I'm going to do great, and you end up doing great. Do you think there's something to that? And is that tied into that, like this connection between language and reality?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because as I was, this mathematical pattern that's found in nature, which is the Fibonacci sequence that feeds into the golden ratio that's found in all things in the natural world, is also prevalent in our human brain. When we are in thought, the neurons in our brain are sparking, okay? And they're creating what's called a ring wave, and we see this on brain MRIs, okay? And these ring waves have the same mathematical unit. They are the Fibonacci sequence that feeds into the golden ratio that are producing the spiral form, which in turn is actually producing the Hebrew letters. So when we are in thought, we are speaking this holy language. And it controls all things. I mean, yes. I mean, what we perceive and what we our beliefs. Mr. Emoto, the whole science on water. He has a book out, and he revealed that human thoughts, when you look at something and we perceive it as good or bad, can have an impact on it. Like he did this rice experiment where he labeled one jar with rice good and the other jar with rice bad. Mm-hmm. And he set them where people could look at them so many times a day. And as it turned out, the good rice stayed preserved, nice and white, but the bad rice turned brown real quick. Mm. So there is some interactions that our thoughts can create our reality. In fact, they are doing that. And in my book, Beyond the Bible Code, I talk immensely about that, I also link it in with quantum mechanics and particle entanglement, and how human consciousness has an effect over the world, over our existence, and things that happen in the world, and how we are creating this,
mm-hmm.
our reality.
So, I guess, what are your hopes that people in writing this book, Beyond the Bible Code, and I believe that this theory is included in that book, correct? Correct?
Yes, Beyond the Bible Code gets deeper than In Search of the Holy Language, because In Search of the Holy Language, it talks about how, you know, showing that there's intelligent design in the letters, but then my third book, Beyond the Bible Code, recaps over that, showing that there's intelligent design in the letters, but then it goes deeper to find codes within the actual text of the Torah. And I can, for instance, you know, there's a code that popular code is that it tells us the name of the book. We can find the name of the book in an intelligent manner, and also the author of the book. Like, for instance, we know that Moses wrote five books, the five books of the Old Testament. And when we open up, when we look at the Torah, okay, the first book, which is Genesis, we find the first Hebrew letter T, and we count 50 letters from that Hebrew letter T, and we get a Hebrew letter O. We count another 50 letters, and we get a Hebrew letter R, and another 50 letters, a Hebrew letter H. It spells the word Torah going forward. Okay? Now, one would think, okay, is that a fluke? Well, then we go to the second book, okay, which is Exodus. And we find the first Hebrew letter T, and we count 50 letters from that, and we get the Hebrew letter O, another 50 letters, Hebrew letter R, another 50 letters, Hebrew letter H, spells the word Torah going forward again.
Mm-hmm.
And why by 50-letter intervals? Because the Torah was given on the 50th day after the Jews left Egypt. They received it on the 50th day at Sinai. So then we go to the third book, which is the book of Leviticus. We don't find the word Torah. Instead, we find the name of God, which is Yod Heh Vav Heh, the Tetragrammaton, which is pronounced Yehovah. But we don't find that by 50-letter intervals. We find it by seven. And why by seven? Because seven is God's number all through Scripture. And then we go to the fourth book, which is the book of Numbers, and we find the first Hebrew letter T, but we find the word Torah being spelled going backwards, okay, by 50-letter intervals. And then we go to the last book of the Old Testament, which is Deuteronomy, and we find the word Torah, again, in the code, going backwards by 50-letter intervals. So we have the first two books of the Old Testament, Torah going, spelling the word Torah going forward, and the last two books spelling it going, the word Torah going backwards, and it's pointing to the center, which is God's name, Yod Heh Vav Heh. So we have the name of the book and the author. And that can't be by chance, by coincidence, because that's showing that there is intelligent design there. And Moses penned this about 3,300 years ago, and there's no way that he could have incorporated this into the Torah. And there's other codes too as well. There's a lineage that can also be found in that can be found in the Torah for the Messiah, from coming from King David, and we find that at 40-letter skipped intervals, and it's in chronological order, and it's in the story that talks about the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we find these codes, but it's in the context of where one would expect to find them, conspiring both with the story and with the meaningful associated numbers. So again, it clearly shows intelligent design.
And it's interesting to me, my thought on this, and I've always felt this, regardless of your religious perspective, whether you're you go to church, you go to temple, whatever it might be, or you don't, whether you consider yourself spiritual or religious, I think at the least the signs in the universe of a creator are all around us. Because I was talking to my kids earlier this morning, earlier this week, about this very thing. I was just saying, if you look around, the tolerances that would need to be achieved to allow us to have life here on Earth. And this is not, in my view, not to say that there isn't life elsewhere in the universe, but life here on Earth, you look at, we know from our own experiences, if it's 50 degrees Fahrenheit, less than what we're used to, we're freezing to death. If you're used to 70 degree temperatures and it's 20, you're freezing to death. You're very cold, and you go down much more, and you can literally freeze to death. So I guess my point is that the tolerances and the things that it takes to make life exist around us every day, whether that's something like the human body, which is a miracle, There's no other way to put it. It's a miracle. Just common sense to me says that there has to be something and someone behind this. Now, we can debate about who that is and why and what kind of implications spiritually or religiously it has. But the idea that something's behind all of this, I just think makes good common sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is designed. I mean, we can clearly see it. It's in the natural world. And that's what I was trying to prove, was to link it to Scripture. But what your religious aspect doesn't have to be, because as I said, religion is meant to teach us a science. And we've gone off on so many tangents with it. and that it's not what it was meant to be. And if one clearly studies the, you know, all ancient texts, clearly we're talking about one creator.
Now, so if folks want to investigate more about this on their own, where would you direct them in terms of your book and your website?
My books are available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, through my publisher. They are available in over 200 countries. And you can also find more information about my books on Anita Meyer Books at Wix.com.
Well, Anita Meyer, it's been a fascinating topic. I think it's very, very interesting. This idea that there is a code and there is information embedded in these ancient texts to kind of lead us to the direction of our creator. Thank you again for your time today.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me on the show.
And thank you for tuning into the program. We certainly appreciate it. Ancient Mysteries on the Air, and we hope that you will continue to investigate these mysteries. We thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.